if you got folks that you that were registered and they're missing information, and they were registered in the last 90 days before the election, and they've got Hispanic sounding last names, that probably is a suspicious voter.
Is that right?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We are now no more than 2 weeks away from Election Day.
Yikes.
Your last chance to step up and do what I believe to be a duty this year to your country, for your country. Yes, voting is a right, not just a privilege as some mistakenly regard it, but a right. And this year, given what will happen based on the two different potential outcomes, the two different choices we now have for the future of this country for generations to come, I am arguing that we all have a duty to vote this year.
I agree with you.
Are you planning to vote?
Damn right.
You heard it here first, folks. Desi Doyen is damn right. She is ready to vote this year. Now, who you choose to vote for or against, as ever, that is your decision. Please choose wisely. But this is not an election to sit out. And beyond voting, I would also argue it is our duty to help our fellow Americans to do their duty any way that we can. As poll workers, poll watchers, helping to drive folks to the polls, or simply asking your friends, your family members, your coworkers, even people you meet on the street, if they have voted yet, if they are planning to do so, how you can help them in any way, if need be. Sure, harangue them. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, this is it. We're all in on this one. And as a matter of fact, all of us are in on this one. And there are going to be a lot of people who will either regret who they voted for or regret not voting at all in this year's elections, frankly, no matter who ends up winning the presidency. But if you can say that you did all that you could have, that will be a great comfort, I suspect, in the years ahead.
And of course, it is not just the presidency, but also control of the U.S. Senate, control of the U.S. House, and that also means Supreme Court justices, and also who's going to be in charge of your state and your local county. Those are people who will affect your life directly. So, yeah, it matters. It's good to think about. And now's the time to take action, to, as you say, do all that you can, because that will be a great comfort no matter what happens.
And with all of that in mind, on this show at least, we will continue to focus on both the duty and the right to vote, as well as the fight to vote in all too many places. And for free and fair and open and accurately tabulated elections, no matter the results. We'll get to some of that today, but first, an update or two on the fight for accountability for attempts to game the last presidential election, with some good news on that front this afternoon, I think. A federal judge on Tuesday ordered former Donald Trump attorney and disgraced and disbarred former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani to turn over all of his valuable possessions and his Manhattan penthouse apartment to the control of Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss, the Georgia election workers that he defamed and to whom he now owes $150 million. Judge Louis Lyman of the federal court in Manhattan said that Giuliani must turn over his interest in the property to the women in 7 days to a receivership that they will control. The judge's turnover order of the luxury items is swift and simple, CNN reports in breaking the news late today. But the penthouse apartment will have its control transferred so that Freeman and Moss can sell it, potentially for millions of dollars. Giuliani had initially listed his Upper East Side penthouse for $6.5 million. He reduced it to $5.7 million when it wasn't moving. So, yeah, the mother and daughter election workers from Georgia, Shea Moss and her elderly mother, Ruby Freeman, stand to make several million dollars on that alone after Rudy Giuliani repeatedly lied about them having committed fraud in the Fulton County, Georgia tabulation room in Atlanta after the 2020 election. In case you have forgotten about that, here was Rudy Giuliani speaking to the Georgia state legislature about it, falsely claiming that they committed fraud. And then later on, testimony by Shea Moss about what was really happening in that counting room.
Ruby Freeman and Shea Freeman Moss and one other gentleman quite obviously, surreptitiously passing around USB ports as if they're vials of heroin or cocaine.
What was your mom actually handing you on that video?
A ginger mint.
That's going to be a pretty expensive ginger mint for Rudy Giuliani.
No kidding.
The claims that he was making about the women were all quickly debunked by both video evidence and local election officials, including Republican ones. But Rudy continued to repeat that lie anyway, as did Donald Trump, who called them vote hustlers, resulting in the women having to relocate from their homes, and Ruby Freeman losing her clothing business in Atlanta. She had agreed to work the election at the request of her daughter Shay back in 2020, who had been a longtime election worker in Fulton County. She loved her job. During the pandemic, finding election workers was very difficult, and it involved risking one's life to help the nation. So, you know, if Ruby Freeman would do that in 2020, do you think that we can all simply just show up to vote in this year's election for the good of our nation? The women, according to CNN's reporting, will also be entitled to about $2 million in legal fees that Giuliani has said the Trump campaign still owes him, according to the judge. And this after, you know, he has refused to admit that what he did was wrong, despite all of the evidence to the contrary, including, I think it was late last year, if I'm
late
not mistaken,
December.
Late
yes.
December in Manhattan outside the courtroom when he was claiming that, oh, he was going to testify and that Rudy was going to, the truth would come out once he took the stand.
When I testify, you'll get the whole story and it will be definitively clear that what I said was true and that whatever happened to them, which is, it's unfortunate if other people overreacted, but everything I said about them is true.
Do you regret what you did to...
Of course I don't regret. I told the truth.
Yeah, well, he didn't tell the truth. He lied. He was called out on that lie. He was sued for that lie, and he never testified in the case that he was promising to testify in when the truth would come out. Judge Lyman has not yet decided if Giuliani will be able to keep a Palm Beach, Florida condo that he also owns, or the four New York Yankees World Series rings that he has. Giuliani's son contends that his father gave them to him, so they can't be given away. We'll see. The defamation case against Giuliani and the latest steps to enforce the approximately $150 million judgment against him are an example of how at least some of the lawyers who assisted in Trump's multiple failed efforts to steal the 2020 election have eventually faced at least some consequences for those actions, even as many of the criminal prosecutions against Trump and his allies have been slow to gain traction. And as a number of those attorneys from 2020 who helped Trump try to steal the election are still running around and trying to help steal the next one, as we'll get to a little bit later. I will hope that at least some of Donald Trump's current attorneys are paying attention, however, to what has happened to at least many of the ones who tried to help him steal the last election. Many have lost their license to practice law, and in cases like Giuliani, are losing just about everything that they own. And hopefully losing their freedom. As many of them, like Giuliani, still face potential prison time in the days ahead, unless he dies first. Last December, a federal jury ordered Giuliani to pay that nearly $150 million for his lies about Freeman and Moss, and the pair have been working ever since to collect that money. Today was a big day for them. There looks like they're going to get at least a chunk of it, and the judge has a hearing scheduled for next Monday about Giuliani's Florida property. More accountability for the dupes and rubes and clowns who were suckered into criming along with Donald Trump 4 years ago. More accountability today following his failed attempt to steal the last presidential election, and not a moment too soon, frankly, before Election Day for this accountability. Election Day this year, with more than 20 million folks across the country already having cast their vote in the 2024 election. A Republican county supervisor in rural Arizona who refused to certify the 2022 midterm election has agreed to a plea deal, becoming the first person criminally sanctioned for refusing to certify an election since 2020. Peggy Judd, a Republican supervisor in Cochise County, Arizona, agreed to plead guilty to a misdemeanor charge for failing or refusing to perform an official duty by an election officer. She will serve an unsupervised probation of at least 90 days and pay a maximum $500 fine. Arizona's Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays said in a press release announcing the plea deal on Monday. Judd, who is still in office, will preside over the presidential election next month and be required to certify its results. The Attorney General's office said in court on Monday that the probation term lasted through the 2024 certification, and that if Judd again refused to certify, she would be in violation of her probation and would face up to 30 days in jail for that violation. Judd and Tom Crosby, also a Republican supervisor in Cochise County, we'll get to him in a moment, they were both charged with two felonies each for conspiracy and interfering with an election officer when they refused to certify results in their rural county in the battleground state of Arizona after the 2022 midterms. Now, coming 2 weeks before the November 5 general election, the acknowledgement of guilt by Judd was seen by some as a warning to other county officials in Arizona and, yes, elsewhere across the country, who might once again be pressured by election conspiracists not to certify the results this year. Quote, any attempt to interfere with elections in Arizona will not be tolerated, the state's Attorney General Mays said in a statement after the plea was entered Monday. My office will continue to pursue justice and ensure that anyone who undermines our electoral system is held accountable. Today's plea agreement, she said, and sentencing should serve as a strong reminder that I will not hesitate to use every tool available to uphold the rule of law and protect the integrity of Arizona's elections. Thomas Volge, a former Tucson, Arizona mayor and professor at the University of Arizona, where he specializes in democratic processes, noted, quote, Judd's official guilty plea represents an important development in securing election integrity in Arizona. It should be a loud wake-up call to county elected officials that they cannot fiddle with the vote intentions of Arizonans for cheap partisan gain. Peter Bondi, managing director of the nonprofit group Informing Democracy, said in a statement that Judd's plea, quote, is a clear reminder that the duty to certify is not optional and should deter every election official from attempting to subvert the will of the voters. This is a victory for democracy, he said, for the rule of law, and most importantly, for every voter who casts a ballot this year. Judd avoided a felony by entering the plea agreement reached with Maricopa County Superior Court, where the criminal case was filed. Judd and Tom Crosby, her fellow Republican on the three-member board in Cochise County, were indicted last year after they delayed the state's canvass. The third member of the board was a Democrat who had voted to certify the election. Judd and Tom Crosby had sought to require a hand count of all the county's ballots amid rampant conspiracy theories about the integrity of the vote in this Republican-leaning area and chaotic public hearings that dragged on for hours about it. They also raised doubts about the accuracy of vote tabulation machines. Republicans in the state that year lost the races for governor and attorney general and secretary of state to the Democrats back in November of 2022. Now, I suspect some who have listened to this program for many years or followed my work at bradblog.com might say, hey, Brad, you have also raised doubts about the accuracy of vote tabulation machines. And that is, of course, 100% true. I absolutely have.
True.
And so long as we have hand-marked paper ballots, you might have heard me mention that once or twice, hand-marked paper ballots and a secure chain of custody for them, guess what? There are ways to determine whether or not those computerized vote tabulation systems are accurate. No, I do not trust them. But yes, there is a way to check them. And it is decidedly not the job of county election officials to unilaterally hold up the certification of election results and risk the disenfranchisement of untold numbers of voters in doing so. That is just not how this works. But Brad, what if there are concerns that votes have not been tabulated accurately or there's been some sort of fraud in those results or a mistake in the programming of the machines? Okay. Then as a county election official, nothing keeps you from documenting those concerns as best you can so that they can then be adjudicated after certification in an open court of law. After certification, which is when, by the way, things like recounts happen after certification. If a candidate or a voter wishes to file for a recount, that's when they do it by law within a certain time period after the results are certified. That's how the election process works. Certification, as a Georgia state judge pointed out last week in a ruling in a lawsuit, is a ministerial duty. It is not an optional decision. If it was optional, then county election officials all over the country could simply steal any election that they didn't like the results of by simply refusing to certify it. It is not a declaration that the results are 100% accurate and free from all fraud or error, but it is a declaration that these are the results that we have. These are the results that we have collected. And to the best of our ability, we have tabulated them and tried to keep them free from error or fraud. But these are the results that we have. And now, if others wish to challenge them in court, they are free to do so.
It is the step that you have to take before you can then look at that those results and those ballots in open court instead of in some secret back room.
That's exactly correct. As Fulton County, Georgia, this is another battleground state. Fulton County, Georgia Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney declared last week in that lawsuit against the county election official who also refused to certify results back there in Fulton County, which is Atlanta. The judge wrote, quote, no election superintendent or member of a board of elections may refuse to certify or abstain from certifying election results under any circumstance. He said this does not leave the superintendent or board member without recourse or the means to voice substantive concerns about an election outcome. The election code has a tested mechanism for addressing alleged fraud and abuse, namely election contests. Election contests arise after the ministerial act of certification. They may be brought by a losing candidate or by an aggrieved elector, at least in Georgia. Importantly, he notes, election contests occur in open court under the watchful eye of a judge and the public. The claims of fraud from one side are tested by the opposing side in that open court rather than being silently adjudicated by a superintendent outside the public space, resulting in votes being excluded from the final count without due process being afforded to those voters. Now, that was a judge in the state of Georgia citing that state's election code and offering a very specific warning to other election officials in the state before the tabulation and certification process begins in that battleground state this year. But the principle is similar in almost all states, and it's a very important message to get out to the public before Election Day. So I'm glad the judge in Georgia did so. I'm glad that Attorney General Chris Mays in Arizona did so. And that's why I'm trying to get this across to you guys right now so that all of this is clear and you can help other people understand it in the weeks ahead, just in case it comes up. And by the way, in some other related news to Georgia, the Georgia Supreme Court upheld lower court rulings blocking last-minute rule changes that were implemented by the MAGA majority on the state election board there that many critics of those rules had said could be used somehow to hold up certification of results in the Peach State this year. That effort, at least for now, seems to have come to a crashing conclusion at the Georgia Supreme Court on Tuesday. But this case regarding the attempt in Arizona to block certification back in 22, according to AP, has been watched far beyond the county as other officials in other parts of the U.S. toy with the idea of not certifying election results. Despite it being a duty classified as ministerial and not up to the discretion of each individual elected official. The tactic has become popular with Republicans who cite false claims of voter fraud and election irregularities when they then refuse to certify results at the county level, causing confusion and chaos and potentially delaying the results at best. A recent report by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, found that 35 local elected officials across 8 states had previously refused to certify election results and could be in a position to do so again this year. They've been sort of doing this in recent years as a practice run for 2024. Arizona is now the only state so far that has brought criminal charges against the officials who refused to certify. 2 county election board members in Surry County, North Carolina, were removed from their positions by the state election board for refusing to certify elections there. in that battleground state, and we'll get to some news out of there momentarily. In other instances, in Nevada and Michigan, also battleground states, warnings from state officials that refusing to certify was illegal eventually led to reversals and officials ultimately certifying election results in those two states. All very important messages to send right now. Now, the other Republican supervisor in Cochise County, Arizona, Tom Crosby, he's still set to go on trial on the felony charge in January, and he is running for re-election in November again. Judd, however, who pled guilty to the misdemeanor charge to avoid trial and potential jail time on a felony, she is not seeking to be reelected. When reached by email on Monday, according to AP, Crosby seemed to have been unaware of Judd's plea, but did not comment on it. We will see if anything changes in the days ahead. In her plea agreement, Judd attested that she, quote, knowingly refused to perform her duty of certification, quote, I voted to delay the canvass during a public Cochise County Board of Supervisors meeting. Her statement said, I knew that the canvass would be delayed if one other supervisor voted with me, and that was Crosby who did so. Judd's attorney said that Judd was happy to have the case behind her. Quote, it's been a major ordeal for her, he said, pretty much bankrupted her. She lost her husband to cancer in the middle of it while she was caring for him, while she was under indictment. This is a chapter, the attorney said, that she once closed, and I don't blame her.
Yeah, no kidding. So many people have been tricked into destroying their lives because they believed Trump's lies.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of the point. I really hope that other election officials, whether they're in Arizona or everywhere else around the country, hear about this, because Donald Trump does not give a damn about these people. And he will do what he has to do to, quote, win in this upcoming election, you know, by hook or by crook. If it means buttering these people up, telling them they'll be great patriots if they do this thing, threatening them if they don't do as he wishes. And, you know, and while I can't speak for him, they like Peggy Judd and Rudy Giuliani and even completely innocent people who did the right thing, like Shay Moss and Ruby Freeman, mm-hmm. they will all have their lives turned upside down and end in bankruptcy or prison in many cases, simply because they went along with the desires of this one twisted, sick, narcissistic con man at the top of the ticket, who's running right now for president for one reason and one reason only, and that is so that he can stay out of prison himself for his years of crimes, many of which he has hoaxed others into committing along with him. He has no interest in helping this country or supporting our Constitution or the rule of law. He is doing this only, completely, totally to save himself, period. Because if he loses, he's going to spend the rest of his life either in jail or fighting against going to jail. And that's the only reason that he is running for another term. That's it. Which is why when he's out on the campaign trail, he's asked questions, he gives ridiculous, nonsensical answers, which is why he doesn't even want to answer questions most of the time. Let's listen to music for 40 minutes instead. Because he doesn't give a damn about any of that. He doesn't give a damn about any of those issues. He doesn't give a damn about anyone in America except for himself. And that is why he's running for president. Anyway, his sort of 180-degree flip-flop on election laws this year in one critical state that he really, really needs to win. That should help bear this out, that he has actually no standards or actual beliefs in anything. And that story is next after a quick break, along with Desi Doyen's latest very rainy Green News report later this hour.
Yep.
All of that and more ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, this is fun, just in case you had any illusions that any position or principle that Donald Trump or the Republican Party have on anything at this point. Just in case you have the idea that it is based, you know, on any sort of principled belief in anything, well, more proof today that no, they have no such principles. There is no position on anything that they're not willing to throw over if it will benefit them politically in doing so, including, yes, election laws that they have spent years pretending to believe in. From Washington Post last night, former President Donald Trump's years-long effort to restrict mail balloting and early voting has skidded into reverse in North Carolina, with the Republican presidential nominee demanding the kind of easier voting access that he labeled fraudulent back when Democrats pushed for the very same or very similar measures during the coronavirus pandemic back in 2020. Trump's about-face comes after Hurricane Helene left dozens dead and thousands temporarily pushed out of their communities in the Tar Heel State after widespread destruction of homes, roads, and water supplies when the storm deluged the western part of the state back in late September. Of course, at the root of this is the fact that the 25 hardest hit counties in North Carolina are almost all deeply Republican counties, places where Trump has got to rack up big margins in order to offset the more liberal urban centers in the state, like Charlotte and Raleigh, that are likely to net voting gains for Vice President Kamala Harris in the battleground state. And it's a state that is absolutely critical to Donald Trump's chances of winning this year. He's got to win North Carolina. Several Trump advisors said that his campaign is worried, however, that hundreds of thousands more Trump voters than Harris voters have been affected by the storm. Trump won North Carolina by just over a percentage point back in 2020. Since the storm hit, the campaign has advocated for changes to voting policy there and procedures that, well, mirror the very same type of pandemic-related accommodations that came under attack from Donald Trump and his allies just 4 years ago.
Because, of course.
The changes include letting voters affected by the storm drop their mail ballot at any county or state election office in North Carolina, allowing counties to open new polling locations and modify their early voting hours to maximize voter participation, waiving county residency requirements for poll workers and observers, and allowing temporary structures to be used in place of damaged or destroyed polling locations. All stuff that when states did those exact same things, you know, for Democrats and Republicans and independents alike to help people vote amid the worst pandemic in 100 years, 4 years ago. Well, Trump claimed that that was election fraud and election interference on behalf of Democrats. Remember that drive through polling places down in Houston, in Harris County?
And a lot of Republican elected officials went along with those lies.
Yes, they did. But now, well, different story, isn't it? Trump's political director, James Blair, said, quote, the county boards in North Carolina need to act quickly to make adjustments. They cannot disenfranchise voters. And we're prepared to do whatever it takes to keep that from happening. But the campaign's rhetoric has apparently puzzled state election officials who had already authorized counties to move forward with almost all of the provisions that Trump is now demanding. They did that before the campaign started circulating these demands. Trump has, of course, long railed against those loosened voting policies, as Washington Post calls them, calling easier access to mail voting, for instance, quote, a big scam. At least back when it was done in 2020 to help people not die because they were required, to vote at a polling place. And baselessly alleging that less restrictive ballot access helped Democrats to steal the 2020 election. You remember that one, the one that Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden. But now they're all in favor of it. Republicans in the North Carolina state legislature and in numerous legislatures nationwide have spent the past 4 years actually tightening voting policies to make it more difficult to vote in an effort, they say, to make it harder to cheat, even if there's zero evidence of such cheating above and beyond a handful of folks, most of whom turn out to be Republicans.
But there's lots of evidence that they did make it more difficult to vote.
Correct. These were attempts to suppress voter participation. But now, because Republicans are concerned that it might cost them votes, well, they are apparently willing to toss all of that aside in the name of access to the polls. And by the way, despite the blatant hypocrisy in all of this, despite the fact that these measures are likely to help, yes, help Republicans in this case more so than Democrats in the state, well, good for the Republican Party. Good for them for trying to ensure access for those voters, even if it is pathetic that they are not willing to do it for everyone else in general. And they're only willing to do it when they think it will help them. Nonetheless, I don't care. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm glad they're going to make it easier for voters of any and all stripes to vote. Quote, wanting to use flexibility or convenience, that's a no-no, said Michael Bitzer of Catawba College in Salisbury, North Carolina, talking about the Republican position. But when it's your base of political supporters, opinions change, he said. The Trump campaign has asked for a similar easing of voting rules down in Florida, which was walloped by two storms in a row, one after another, Helene and then Milton. Trump also encouraged his supporters in Nevada ahead of a rally in Reno this month to bring their completed mail ballots to the rally and hand them over to campaign staff. And what has that sort of thing been derisively called by Donald Trump and Republicans and Fox News for years and years? That's right. Ballot harvesting. What do you know? Republicans are apparently now in favor of ballot harvesting, at least in swing states that they think they may have a chance of winning and really, really need to make sure they get all the votes. Ballot collection is what it's actually called. That is perfectly legal in Nevada, even if not in all states. Trump has nonetheless assailed the practice, according to the Washington Post, accusing Democrats of illegal ballot harvesting, which, by the way, isn't actually the word for it. But it, you know, it sounds sort of illegal-ish and vaguely like something that, you know, undocumented immigrants do. They harvest, don't they? So they're happy to use that that phrase to denounce helping people to make sure that their ballots get cast. Unless it is, you know, they who need to make sure that their voters get their ballots cast. Then it's a different story. Hey, bring your ballots to the rally. We'll make sure it gets put in. But again, I have no problem with it. I'm glad they're doing it. Nearly all early voting sites in Western North Carolina, which leans very Republican and was the hardest hit by Hurricane Helene in the state, almost all of those early voting sites were able to open on time last week, despite the devastation from the storm, which they're still wrestling with there. But it's great news for voters of all stripes. And it is a credit to the election officials there. And again, I don't care who it is that it ends up benefiting politically. It benefits all of us because it benefits democracy, which we need to protect and to save. Preliminary early voting data from across the state of North Carolina shows robust participation among both Republicans and Democrats, which is a shift from 2020, back when Democrats outperformed Republicans dramatically in the early vote, when Donald Trump suggested it was early voting as somehow a way to commit fraud. So now more Republicans are voting early this year, which is why I have I've cautioned Democrats that while, you know, reports of record early voting numbers are great news for democracy, as I see it, that may or may not be great news for Democrats. Appearing in Asheville on Monday, Asheville, North Carolina, Trump, the pathetic congenital liar, convicted felon and hypocrite, congratulated voters in the storm-ravaged western part of the state for getting out to cast their ballots. Quote, "The thing that amazes me most is areas such as this and others where it's so hard to vote," he said. "People have lost their homes. They've sometimes lost members of their family. You know, they've set a record in voting. Can you believe it?" said Trump. Well, yeah, I can believe it. And this is as about 100 people are confirmed to have died across the state following Helene. Meanwhile, during the 2020 COVID pandemic, about 230,000 people were killed before Election Day across the country, more than 5,000 of them in North Carolina alone. Before and after which, Trump complained about the changes that were made by election officials to make it easier for everyone to vote that year. So, yeah, I can believe it. Trump's political director, James Blair, said the campaign is also reviewing options for transportation for voters who are affected and need help getting to the polls. Really?
What? So it's okay now?
Yes. Even Republicans have spent years trying to block people who help others get to the polls. But, yep, they're happy to do it now. Voting harder has been the mantra, unfortunately, of the majority party here, said Bob Phillips of the voting rights advocacy group Common Cause North Carolina. He was speaking about the changes to accommodate voters in the state. So far, those of us who do this kind of work, we were relieved and heartened to see Republicans get behind these measures. So, yes, I'm happy that it'll be easier for folks of all political persuasions to vote in parts of North Carolina. And I'm even happy to laud the Republicans for doing the right thing, even if they are only doing it in this one small limited instance, because, you know, they're doing so hypocritically for self-serving purposes. But that's okay. That's okay. If it's better for voters, I'm okay with that. But let's not get too giddy about Republicans in North Carolina. They are still up to their old anti-democratic tricks in the state. In a video obtained by CBS News, the leader of a so-called election protection activist group of about 1,800 volunteers in North Carolina, a group of 2020 election deniers, is seen instructing attendees at a virtual meeting of the group to flag voters with, quote, Hispanic-sounding last names as a way to identify potentially suspicious registrations as the group combs through voter rolls ahead of the 2024 election.
If you've got folks that you that were registered and they're missing information, and they were registered in the last 90 days before the election, and they've got Hispanic sounding last names, that probably is a suspicious voter.
Uh-huh. That probably is a suspicious voter. Why? Well, Hispanic sounding last name, you know. That was James Womack, the leader of this effort. He's the chair of the Republican Party in Lee County, North Carolina. He's the president and founder also of the North Carolina Election Integrity Team, as the group calls themselves. They are a group of self-described patriots dedicated to investigating the election for what they perceive as incidents of fraud in the pivotal presidential battleground states. You know, evidence of fraud like, well, they've got a Hispanic last name. That's suspicious. Polls in the state of North Carolina put it at a statistical tie right now between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Womack says the group has a list of multiple factors that they're using to flag what they describe as suspicious voters, like, you know, they've registered in the last 90 days. Well, that sounds suspicious. And, of course, that Hispanic last name, well, that puts you right over, baby. Got to question that voter. He says, quote, we have corrupt voter lists, alleging that, quote, individual citizens have a right to have clean voting lists, I guess is what he's saying, to have that information about the list to identify potential illegal or improperly registered people. Do they have that right? Yes. But to challenge voters simply because they have a Hispanic-sounding last name? Nope. That is out-and-out suppression, and North Carolina will not be the only place where you will be hearing about exactly this sort of thing this year, particularly if the election is close or Donald Trump is announced to be the loser again. Womack's North Carolina organization is one of eight state-based groups under the umbrella of the broader national effort to so-called clean up voter rolls, a network called the Election Integrity Network. It is led by the longtime GOP election attorney Cleta Mitchell, which is a very nice way for CBS News to describe her. In fact, Cleta Mitchell is a longtime GOP voter fraud fraudster, and arguably a criminal. She was on that infamous taped phone call after the 2020 election in which Donald Trump attempted to strong arm the Georgia Secretary of State into finding him 11,780 more votes so that he could steal the state. She was on that call helping him to make that case, helping him to strong arm an election official in Georgia, which is a violation of the law. But Womack's comments in North Carolina, of course, that were caught on tape, echoed a common theme that is being repeated this year by Trump and Cleta and other Republicans on the campaign trail, that tens of thousands of undocumented immigrants somehow intend to cast ballots even as there is zero evidence to support that claim. Doesn't matter. They're making the claim anyway. Juan Proano, the CEO of the League of United Latin American Citizens, or LULAC, told CBS News that it defies logic to expect undocumented immigrants would take the risk of crossing the border and then place themselves in legal jeopardy by registering to vote and actually voting in an election. Quote, "It is very much a myth," said Proano. But the campaigns have essentially used it as rhetoric, again, to try and suppress and intimidate the Latino vote. Jeff Loperfido, the chief counsel of voting rights at the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, says targeting of individual voters based in part on whether their names sound Hispanic is, quote, not surprising and meant to depress turnout of legal voters and ultimately cause chaos and confusion around the outcome of the election. And again, that is what all of this is about. Causing chaos and confusion to help manipulate the results through all sorts of means. Both before and after Election Day on November 5, there are all sorts of opportunities for someone who wants to game an American election to be able to do so. And so the Republicans will do so after November 5 if Donald Trump is declared to be the loser again. So I suspect there is going to be much more of this to come in the weeks ahead. You've been warned. And actually, by the way, if it happens after November 5, that's a good sign because that means we're all lucky because it means that Donald Trump has lost again. And so we'll be fighting to save our democracy again. But I'd rather be on that side of it than hearing on the night of November 5 that Donald Trump has been declared the winner. So we will see. If we have to fight, we will fight. Even if the fight to protect and save our democracy will need to continue for a long time to come. The fight to protect and save humanity, however, on planet Earth, well, that will continue right after a quick break with Desi Doyen and her latest Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Here at The Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Okay, I'll tell you what, I can't wait to get out of here, Des.
We are running late.
We are, and I'm very hungry. So as soon as we finish with this, I'm heading straight out to McDonald's, get myself a quarter pounder.
Oh, dear.
Sounds delicious.
No.
But first, our latest Green News Report.
Without electricity, we have nothing, says this woman. We don't have food. We don't have a way to work.
Cuba hit with double whammy. First, a national power outage, then Hurricane Oscar.
At this time, I am sitting on the roof of my cop car, my police truck. I am completely surrounded by water.
Historic rains strike New Mexico, France, and Bangladesh. Plus, global coral bleaching event is now the largest and longest ever recorded.
All of that fantastic news and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I love cows. But if we go with Kamala, you won't have any cows anymore. I love cows. I think they're so cute and so beautiful. But according to Kamala, who's a radical left lunatic, you will not have any cows anymore.
Do we really want that for another 4 years? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, all the power went out in Cuba. But it went out before the hurricane came in. What's going on in Cuba?
Well, Hurricane Oscar is what's going on. Oscar surprised weather forecasters when it unexpectedly, rapidly intensified into a hurricane in less than a day, fueled by record hot ocean waters, making first landfall as a Category 1 in the Bahamas on Sunday, then a second landfall the same day in northeastern Cuba, which was already suffering under an island-wide power outage.
Rapid intensification. Where have I heard that before?
A lot this year. Cuba's national electric grid collapsed on Friday before the storm when its largest fossil-fueled power plant tripped offline. Cuban officials blame the blackout on a confluence of events, from increased U.S. economic sanctions blocking fuel and parts shipments to the island's crumbling electric grid and more. Slow-moving Oscar dumped 20 inches of rain in some areas, causing widespread flooding and exacerbating ongoing shortages of food, medicine, and fuel, raising concerns of a looming humanitarian crisis. The governor of New Mexico declared a state of emergency after flash floods from historic rainfall cut off the city of Roswell over the weekend. Close to a year's worth of rain fell in a matter of hours, flooding homes and sweeping away cars. State police say at least 2 people were killed, more than 300 rescued. The region has already grappled with the devastating impacts of wildfires and flash flooding earlier this year.
A lot of rain in this week's report.
And more coming. A similar situation in central France after torrential storms late last week dumped more than 2 feet of rain in 2 days.
Wow.
The worst flooding in decades inundated homes and caused power outages and significant infrastructure damage. It's the fifth major flooding event in France in 5 months. Mm. Northern Italy was also struck by deadly floods after days of heavy rain.
Wow.
In Bangladesh, entire villages have been cut off by flooding from unusually heavy monsoon rains that destroyed 1 million metric tons of rice, according to the country's agriculture ministry, requiring increased grain imports as food prices soar.
Good Lord.
Studies show man-made climate change is increasing the frequency and intensity of extreme rainfall events, which are particularly damaging in vulnerable developing nations like Bangladesh.
And Cuba.
Meanwhile, in the oceans, NOAA announced that an ongoing global coral bleaching event is now the longest and largest on record, affecting more than 75% of the planet's coral reefs due to record-shattering ocean temperatures driven by humanity's burning of fossil fuels. Coral reefs are the nurseries of vital global fisheries around the world, and bleaching events result in sick or dead reefs.
Nothing but good news today.
In politics.
Speaking of bad news.
Internal documents obtained by the Washington Post reveal a key oil industry lobbying group's extensive plans for a monumental rollback of President Biden's landmark climate rules. The American Exploration and Production Council seeks to repeal rules requiring drillers to curb flaring of methane, a potent climate warming gas that scientists say is responsible for nearly a third of human-caused global warming, and much more. The documents also confirm that the industry's voluntary pledges to cut methane have fallen short.
Imagine that.
The document calls for political spending to support Republican U.S. Senate candidates in swing states to flip control of the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, in more positive news, the Department of Energy released another $10 billion in funding under Biden's infrastructure law to upgrade the nation's electric grid and improve resilience against the growing threats of extreme weather and climate change.
And extreme Republicans. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And I wonder, still I wonder, who'll stop the rain.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen,
yes,
our producer. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we've ever done since the beginning of time, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That is made possible by those of you kind enough to hit one of those donate buttons at bradblog.com or just go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. We really need your help right now to keep going throughout this election. Anything you can do is greatly appreciated. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.